Hey, good afternoon, everyone. We've got a video for you to listen to. It's about 4 minutes long. We've got an article to look at. Let me set it up for you, and then we'll listen. There's an atheist asking Marco Rubio if he is running for pastor-in-chief or commander-in-chief. Now, I don't guess we're really offering this up as an endorsement of Rubio, because I don't see him as a viable candidate at this point.
He seems to be a distant third.
Distant third, is that where you put him?
I think that's where I would put him right now.
Okay, all right. So maybe if there's a fall by one of the other two, then he could step back in there?
Yeah, I don't think he's totally... He's not in Jeb Bush and John Kasich territory yet. I think he's still on the outer edges.
Okay.
Behind Trump and Cruz.
But in any case, regardless of that, this is a great answer to a question. Especially for a Roman Catholic. And he's a pretty solid Roman Catholic, right?
I don't know.
He's pretty outspoken about it.
Right.
Yeah.
As far as, we're not on the edge of being
Roman. He's not an Easter Christmas only Roman Catholic. He seems pretty devout.
Which calls into question, can you be saved and be a Roman Catholic? Oh, that's a whole discussion we can have after we listen to the video. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're going to listen to the video right now.
Millions of atheists and non-theists around the country.
All right, let me back that up.
One of the fastest growing voter blocks. And
let me see if I can back that up and do a better job.
Atheist voter. Mm-hmm. I represent millions of atheists and non-theists around the country. One of the fastest growing voter blocks. And you said earlier that you want to stand up for religious freedom and all of that. My question is, for atheist voters that are looking for somebody that will uphold their rights as Americans and not pander to a certain religious group, I just noticed your recent ad. It mentioned nothing about policy. It mentioned nothing about ideas. And it simply talked about wanting us to follow faith and find God and go to heaven and things like that, which is fine for those people that align with you. My question is, how do you plan on upholding our rights and focusing on non-theists? And you know, because there's talks in our community about you running as pastor-in-chief instead of commander-in-chief. So I'm curious your thoughts.
Well, first of all, as I said during my speech, you have a right to believe whatever you want. You have a right to believe in nothing at all. You will certainly have that right. By the way, I'm a Christian. I can't force you to be a Christian. Christianity is a free gift. We Christians believe that salvation is a free gift that has to be willfully accepted. We can't force it on you. So you have a right to believe whatever you want, and I congratulate you on believing whatever you want. I'm going to share my faith, especially when I'm asked. Because my faith influences who I am in every aspect of my life. First of all, I believe you can't really understand America unless you don't understand. If you don't believe that Judeo-Christian values influenced America, you don't know history. I'm not saying you, I'm just saying in general. This nation was founded on the principle that our rights come from our Creator. If there's no Creator, then where did your rights come from? And so that's why it's important for us to understand that. And we're going to protect the rights of Americans to continue to believe that. We're also going to have a country where no one is forced to violate their conscience, which means no one's going to force you to believe in God, but no one's going to force me to stop talking about God. I'm not going to force you to pray. I'm not going to force you to go to church. I'm not going to force you to aspire or to espouse beliefs that you don't have, but no one's going to take away my right and your right to live out the teachings of your faith. No one. And I'm praying. I want to be very clear about something. Not only am I influenced by my faith, but it is the single greatest influence in my life. And from that, I'll never hide. And I'll tell you why. Because I know that if I'm lucky, I get to live to be 85 or 90, depending on what life expectancy becomes with all this new medicine. But I'm more interested in eternity and the ability to live forever with my Creator that you don't believe in, but I do. And that's what I aspire to more than anything else. One of the most, that's why I believe the most important job I have is the job of a father and a husband. More important even than the presidency. Because I only have a handful of years to teach and instruct my children with the right values, not just to allow them to succeed in life, but more importantly, to also achieve, to be able to accept the gift of eternity. I believe that God, our Creator, became a man. And He came down to earth and lived among us. Suffered like a man would. Emotions, physical suffering, emotional suffering, pain, illness, sickness, sadness. And then He died. And He died to remove sins that we couldn't remove up to that point. They could only be covered, but they couldn't be removed. And as a result, I now have the free gift of the opportunity to live forever with my Creator. And I believe that passionately, and it influences every aspect of my life. I respect very much your willingness to stand up and ask that question, because I know you're in a small minority here of people that share that view that you have. But you have a right to it. That's why it makes us such a great country. I would say this, though. You shouldn't be worried about my faith influencing me. In fact, I think you should hope my faith influences me. Here's why. You know what my faith teaches me? My faith teaches me that I have an obligation to care for the less fortunate. My faith teaches me that I have an obligation to love my neighbor. My faith teaches me that I have an obligation for those who are hungry to help try to feed them, for those who are naked to help clothe them. My faith teaches me I need to minister to those in prison. My faith teaches me that if I want to serve Jesus, I have to serve each other. And I think you should hope that that influences me. I know it's made this a greater country.
All right, well, that's a pretty good answer. Your reaction, what do y'all think?
Well, I had to be told he was a Catholic.
Okay. All right. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Did you know what he was before you? Did David email you the video this morning, or did you
hear
it just now?
I saw it on Facebook, I think, this morning. Yeah.
Okay.
I've heard him in different debates, and I had no idea that he was Catholic. From everything that I've ever heard come out of his mouth, I always assumed he was more of an evangelical Christian.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. Am I wrong, David? I thought he was a Catholic.
No, it says in the article, Rubio himself a Roman Catholic.
Okay, all right.
He is.
But. And he's not talking about seven sacraments or anything like that. I mean, he almost sounds like he understands the gospel.
And he didn't call himself a Catholic. He called himself a Christian.
Christian, right.
Which is pretty unique, isn't it?
I think so. I think there's a certain, you know, I always equate some of the social Catholicism with the social Judaism is they, you know, I'm a Jew, I'm a Catholic. That kind of comes across on equal grounds, and there's a certain, I don't know, cultural pride to that, and so they're not always excited to call themselves Christians more so than calling themselves Catholics.
Yeah, it almost kind of reminds me. I don't know if it struck down here. I remember it back home in Ohio, but a movement called Catholics Come Home.
Yeah.
And they had several video ads and things like that that they were, it was almost like the Catholic Church was trying to push a return to Scripture, that they wanted Catholics to read and understand their Bible, something that was really quite different to what Catholicism used to be.
Yeah, Bill and I have done, I think, a couple podcasts on those Catholics Come Home television commercials.
Yeah, I was just thinking that, but I thought it might have been you exclusively. I guess we did some.
I don't know, I can't remember. Your memory's better than mine, but I thought we looked at them.
Yeah, well, I think that, and I've said it before, but the interesting thing on the Catholic Church is I don't know that there's a greater divide between the church and its parishioners than in that church. Because the Catholic, if you read the position of the Catholic Church on marriage and family and abortion, and we would be in total agreement with them. But when you survey a basic Catholic parishioner, 85% of them don't agree with the hierarchy of the Catholic Church. So there's an interesting disconnect there that I would keep subscribing to a church and keep saying I'm a member of a certain group, but not believe in the majority of what they say. And I don't know that there's another denomination in the country that's like that, that has that divide.
So what is this about pastor-in-chief versus commander-in-chief? I mean, is Rubio got a standing ovation in the room? I mean, it was pretty overwhelming, the support he got, but it was only a handful of people in the room.
Yeah, I was talking to our church member, Mike, that gave me the article the other day, and he said, do you think that guy was a plant? You know, was he trying to trip Rubio up in an impromptu press conference? You know, I wonder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he did kind of ramble a little bit with his question, so he didn't exactly sound professional. So maybe he wasn't. Maybe it was a genuine question.
He didn't sound real belligerent either.
Right.
It.
Yeah.
He seemed fairly friendly.
Yeah.
So let's. Can I be a Catholic and be saved, David?
I think you can. I think it's difficult. I think there's a lot of red tape. I think there's a lot of stuff in the way. I'm of the opinion, and people might disagree with me, but I'm.
They will. Don't worry.
Yeah, I know
this
they will.
Is
I've
our
heard
audience.
It. Don't worry. I've heard it. You know, as soon as I defend C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien, I get ripped apart too. So. I think you can. I think there are things that we all do that we consider, we wouldn't call them sacraments, but I think that we would call almost something that we consider holy or almost sacred, things that we believe are kind of our duties as Christians that have nothing to do with our salvation. And I think it's possible for a Catholic to think, I have to believe that this ritual is my duty to do as a Christian. Doesn't have anything to do with my salvation. My trust is in Christ and the cross. But I feel like I have a personal conviction to do this. You know, we might do it with clothing or a Bible translation or even a quiet time or things that we do that are outpourings of our love for Christ that aren't necessarily necessary. But I think those sacraments and how the Roman Catholic Church defines them, it's hard to overcome that obstacle. But I think Catholics can do it. There are a lot of songwriters out there, John, you may know, you know, that are Roman Catholic, and they write beautiful songs. Matt Mayer is one.
Yep.
Roman Catholic, and his songs are theologically solid.
Yep. Christ has risen from the dead.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's interesting, but I'm not willing to throw all Catholics under the bus, but I do think it's pretty difficult.
Bill, what are your thoughts? Would you agree with David, or would you draw a line in the sand differently?
Well, I think a Catholic as... no, I would agree with him and disagree. I think he would agree with my disagreement.
Yeah.
A catechism affirming Catholic cannot believe the gospel.
Right. Right.
The catechism is so immense. I don't know any normal Catholic that's read it. I mean, it's 1,000 pages at least. At least the 2001 or 2002 version is that I came across. You know, it's very thick, and I don't know anyone that could read everything that's in it and affirm it all and still say, yeah, the work of Christ is sufficient. So that type of Catholic, no, I don't think they can be saved, because by their very nature, they have to affirm that there's no salvation outside the church. Mm-hmm. But a Catholic in name only, or at least maybe a quasi-Catholic, a Catholic who goes to Catholic Church, I think that there is a possibility that they could glance up at the Stations of the Cross and realize, you know what, I really don't think there's anything I can do that can ultimately pay for my own sins. I don't feel anything when I confess to a priest. I don't feel anything when I drink the juice. I don't feel anything when I light the candle. But I do feel things when I think about what Christ did for me. I've met a man like that in basic training when I went into the army. So I have to assume that it is possible for a Catholic to believe the gospel and be saved.
And I just Googled what church is Marco Rubio a member of, and it says that when he was a child in Miami, he was Roman Catholic. His family moved to Las Vegas, and it says that when they were in Las Vegas, they became Mormons. Then they moved back to Florida, and they went back to the Catholic Church. But then it says in 2000, he began attending Christ Fellowship in Miami. And apparently he still goes there, or still a member there.
Christ Fellowship
in Miami.
Any idea what that's all about?
No. I'll have to Google that one.
Yeah. Right.
Let me go to the next one.
But that sounds probably a little... Well, I mean, clearly he's got an understanding of the gospel.
Yeah.
I mean, when he talks about my Creator, leaving heaven, becoming a man, mm-hmm. suffering, paying for sin...
Gift. Yeah.
Right. I mean...
Yeah, and I've said the only thing I didn't hear in that presentation was resurrection, but I don't think he was avoiding it. Clearly, even if he's a devout Roman Catholic, he's not avoiding resurrection.
Of course not.
Yeah. But other than that, I think he covered just about all the bases of a good gospel presentation.
Maybe he could have added that he lived a sinless life.
Mm.
You know, he mentioned that his death paid for sin, but not that.
Mm.
He said he suffered those emotions and physical pain.
But there were no mention of sacraments. There was no mention of works.
If there was an opportunity to add in a sacrament, that it would be. I mean,
I thought his part where he says, you know, you want me to have this faith was just excellent.
Yeah.
I thought that was just superb.
And for him to go out on and say, it is my faith is the most important thing in my life that informs the way I would govern. I mean, there's not many candidates that would say that anymore.
Well, who is saying that?
Nobody.
Is Trump saying that?
It depends
on where he's at.
Yeah. Literally, right. He likes to be a Presbyterian. You know, he's very proud of that. But, you know, in other places, not so much.
Well, how about Ted Cruz? Because Ted Cruz is supposed to be the evangelical candidate, right?
Yeah. I heard bits and snippets here and there, but nothing that complete. Nothing that's... Because really, that's political suicide among a section of the population. Once you say, my Christianity is the most important factor in the way that I'm going to be president, well, there's a group of people on the left side of this country that
you have
say,
just alienated.
I'm done with you. You know, we're not. We would never vote for you now. So it's a bold stand. You know, it's we'll see. Can somebody that is that bold about their faith be elected president in a general election?
Well, let's the answer is no.
You know, just read.
I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah,
the answer is no. I hope I'm wrong.
If you just know a little 300-year-old, 200-year-old plus history, you know that the framers of our Constitution were not thinking be the religion of your choice. I mean, they were consistently warning people of the Mohammedans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't be a Muslim if you want to. They were consistently aware of the Jewish peoples in Europe and the problematic paradigm that they offered for crucifying the Lord. The founders of our faith, it was more of a, you have the freedom of religion to be the Christian of any type you wish. You know, there was no paradigm of an extra Christian religion. So the fact that the atheist, I guess this is where I would start the discussion, the fact that the atheist thinks that there's supposed to be an America where there's a section of atheists was never in the purview of the founding fathers. They would never have said, but you don't have to believe that your rights came from no one. And that you don't have to believe that.
And that was a pretty strong point. You know, this is where your rights came from a creator.
Right.
If it didn't come from there, that you know, whatever you want to say about them being deists or anything else, they recognize a creator that endowed rights. And I know you probably caught it too, but I heard a little Roger Williams in there too when he mentioned the idea of freedom of conscience and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
which is not a Catholic idea.
No, not even close, right?
Right. So, what'd you find out, Steve?
I went to the church's website. They don't have a whole lot of doctrine or beliefs, but it is a mega church. They have several meeting places all over Miami-Dade County.
So it's not a Roman Catholic church.
No, they have a tab called Baptism, in which their baptism statement is just like ours.
But it
and
says
small groups.
Talks about their what is the worship experience like. It's meaningful, creative, spiritually engaging. It has a time of live worship music, a blend of live, energetic rock and soul that has guests standing.
Well, that's a mega church, you know.
We're blessed with an amazing worship team. Our pastor shares a biblically centered message that's always honest and challenging, empowering you to apply Jesus' words to your daily life. We end with a few minutes of prayer, then wrap up with announcements and a time of giving, an offering, pretty much is all that it says.
So evangelical or semi-evangelical megachurch. So he was a Catholic, seems like.
Yeah.
Right. As a child. Or until 2000.
His answer was clearly satisfying to an evangelical in the room.
Yeah.
And I would say it's more satisfying than anything I've heard from Ted Cruz or Donald Trump. So what should we make of this fascination with Donald Trump? Why are there so many evangelicals in love with Donald Trump?
Because I think if Cruz is the quintessential evangelical, honestly, I don't think he sounds like he's... I don't think he sounds very strong. And I think that's the problem, is that the Huckabees are just... He's never going to sound non-pastoral to me. And it's not that I don't want people to sound pastoral, but I don't want the king figure, and I know I'm treading on crazy ground here in America where we don't have a king, but I don't want the mouthpiece of our country to sound like he's opening a worship service. I want him to thunder, and Trump does that. And that's the draw, you know. That's the draw. Is
he
that
speaks
he,
his mind, says he, what he
yeah.
thinks, or says what he says he believes. And I know that people oppose that or think that he's just saying what people want to hear. But.
Well, he's definitely polarizing, and he says our in quotes, our position, the conservative position, very strongly. That is a component of it. But I think another part that you cannot undersell, and it's the same reason I think that Hillary Clinton is still being talked about, is in America, celebrity still is king. And, I mean, he was on television, and, you know...
Oh, he's a rich guy.
Yeah, and same deal with Hillary. She was the outspoken wife of Bill Clinton during all those crazy years. You know, in some ways still seen as a victim, in some ways still seen as the triumphal women's advocate. I mean, it's just celebrity in America is crazily worshipped. I mean, it's just incredible how much weight that carries. I mean, I just can't believe who cares what the Kardashians think, but there's still stuff on TV, still stuff on the tabloids. It's just unbelievable.
And Joey and I did a podcast months ago about it. You know, he's kind of the Frankenstein of our, or Frankenstein's monster of our current political climate. You know, the liberal side has pushed this political correctness agenda so far that, and Trump so bucks against that trend and says, I don't really care who I offend, I'm going to say whatever I want, that we all kind of have that, I think, deep down. Well, I just want to say whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something, and I understand that. I get that. I could appreciate that attitude of, I don't care what you think, I'm going to tell you what I believe and what the truth is. But, you know, we lose a little bit on the, there's not a lot of Christ-likeness in Donald Trump. There's not a lot of winsomeness in Donald Trump. There's not a lot of grace in Donald Trump. So he is very firmly, you know, anti-evangelical as far as I can see. He might be a good politician. He may be a good leader, but he's not a Christian, and he's not even close to being a Christian.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you say, I know he comes across as not being very graceful, but, you know, reading articles that about people that are close to him or that have known him over the years, I've read of things, you know, he has been very generous, mm-hmm. and or very, I guess maybe you could say graceful, to, you know, people in need that have come to his attention. And
so benevolent.
So he chops the wood for the families. See that?
Right. Yes. Yeah, very. Yeah. Like if something comes across his desk per se, that, you know, somebody just had a tragedy and he hears and, you know, he feels benevolent, I mean, he'll take care of them.
Right. But he certainly doesn't understand grace.
Not in a biblical sense at all.
No, this is the man who says that I've never done anything that I need to ask forgiveness for.
I don't need to ask
for
forgiveness, yeah.
Right, I mean, how an evangelical doesn't see, you can't be saved. I know that's obnoxious for me to save, but the very premise of it is I need forgiveness.
He's very much that, you know, Jesus and I are good. You know, I like that Jesus guy. He's a cool guy. He says some good things. I like.
And 2 Corinthians.
Yeah, and
that's
2 Corinthians.
That's a good book, too.
Yeah, you know, right. I mean, he's. Hey, I like that
it's
guy. He's got some good things to say.
You know, yeah, it's just over his.
He's, and I think he embodies America in that sense, too. You know, he's never been Christian a day in his life. But he gets up on stage, and all these evangelical voters are like, just say something about Jesus. Just say something about God. And he goes, you know what? Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. I'm voting for that guy. He's a Christian. He's at Liberty University. You know, that's all they need. All we need in the celebrity culture is somebody to even hint that they have some vague belief in God. You know, Matthew McConaughey won an Academy Award 2 years ago, and he got up on stage and he talked about a belief in God, and we're like, he's a born-again Christian. Never mentions Jesus, never mentions the gospel, he just said God, and he's a born-again Christian.
And he won't put on a shirt.
You know, you know, we got a guy like Tim Tebow, who is the most below-average quarterback in the history of the NFL, and we love him because he's a Christian. And I think he's the real deal. I think he's born again, but he's on a pedestal because he's a Christian athlete. We just love the celebrity. It's like we've embraced that culture in the church, just because the world has, and I think Trump's the perfect storm.
And that didn't help Josh Hamilton at all.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I don't know. I think part of it, it's almost like preaching a funeral, and you're just like, oh my goodness, please just give me some evidence this person is saved, so I'm not lying about them. You know. But again, when it comes to the big litmus test for me is, can I imagine going to heaven and seeing someone who's never said sorry to his dad, never said sorry? I'm in the Father's house, and I've never said sorry to God for anything. I'm sorry. I can't imagine it for a minute.
Is there anything in the article worthy of discussion before we wrap this podcast up?
No.
The answer is no. Wow. Okay. I think it's unfortunate that Rubio doesn't seem to have an opportunity. David seems to think differently. I hope you're right. I wonder, David, if he's a candidate for VP.
Yeah, I think he could be. If the nominee's Cruz, I'm not so sure. You know, because strategically speaking, that would fill your Hispanic quota, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way whatsoever. But I don't know that you would put 2 Hispanic men on the ticket.
Right.
If it was Trump.
Well, especially since they seem to hate each
other. Yeah, well, you know, Trump and Cruz were buddy-buddy there for a while, and now that's gone off the deep end the last couple weeks.
Cruz and Rubio, though.
Yeah, so I think...
Cruz and Rubio don't like each other at all.
It would seem to be that yes. way. And they're, all their debates, they just bash each other.
Right.
And but it seems like he would be a fit of sorts with if it was Trump. I don't know what happens if Trump wins the nomination. I don't know who lines up with him.
I don't either, because Trump has been alienating everybody every time he gets a chance.
Yeah, I don't know who lines up.
Well, I think that's why Palin is starting to hit the news again. I think that she's going to try to make a bid for the vice president.
The second time?
And if he does that, then it's done. Yeah, I mean, there's that. She is, and I don't totally dislike her. I think she gets sort of a bad rap, but she's earned a lot of that bad rap.
Sure.
And she's put herself in a position where she's a joke.
Isn't she the female version of Trump, though? I mean, she's
been in a way. Yeah.
I mean, she's not rich like him, but she says whatever she wants to.
Yeah.
And her personal life does not back up her so-called conservative talk.
She did a reality show too, so she's into that sort of thing. She likes the limelight.
Well, if she wanted to govern, she had a job. She could have stayed right there in that job and continue to make
popular.
She couldn't continue to make a difference for her state.
Yeah.
But she didn't. She didn't do any of that nonsense. After the VP thing didn't work out for her, it's almost like she got catapulted into such limelight that being a governor was no longer, it was just too lowly of a job for her or something like that.
Well, you have no idea how much behind the scenes, though, the establishment was thinking that she's the next, our female chance at a crack at, you know, if we could put a female in the office. And so maybe they twisted her arm to do things that.
Yeah, she maybe
was,
right.
It was a little too soon, I think. I totally get what McCain was trying to do with her being the nominee, because he was lost anyway, and he was trying to make a big splash. If he would have picked some other white dude, it would have made no difference, and it would have been same old, same old. So he was trying to go off the grid a little bit, and it didn't work. I don't think losing the election was Palin's fault whatsoever.
Mm-mm.
I don't think it hurt the numbers at all. I think he would have lost handily no matter what. But she definitely took a lot of the blame for that and has been pushed in, and I think she's been fighting to get back to her to the limelight ever since, and that's where you get a lot of her behavior from.
What do you make of the Democrat side, David, with the guy from Vermont? What is going on with that? How is he even making any headway?
Well, it's the one that boggles my mind, because this should be the most slam dunk election since 1980 for the Republicans. The administration has failed on so many levels. You know, the foreign policy is ridiculous. Obamacare is an abject disaster. You know, the economy's not doing well. Everything should be pointing towards that. And the two candidates that are running and are serious threats are a woman that's about to be indicted for releasing confidential emails when she was Secretary of State, has no reputation whatsoever, and an admitted socialist who's, 75 years old, you know, and is just kind of the grumpy old man up there on the podium. And yet, they're both serious contenders for the presidency. I mean, I don't know what's going on. And Hillary's dropping like crazy in the polls lately, and Bernie's ahead in Iowa and New Hampshire. So, do I think he wins the nomination? No, I don't think there's any way in anything that he could win the nomination.
No, but just the reality that he's getting crowds.
Yeah, that people like him.
Right, that there's people that are going there. And isn't it a reflection of the sheer ignorance of today's society? You know, if you unpack socialism and you say to them that there's never been a country on the planet that's ever done this successfully.
Yeah. And he says he's a democratic socialist, which I don't know that that's any different than a socialist.
Or a Democrat.
And I think they're the same thing. I don't know that there's anything different than that. You know, and he's kind of a version of Trump in the sense that he pretty much says what he wants, and he's not eloquent, and he's kind of cranky all the time, and he's got all these weird hand motions, and he's entertaining to watch, but I don't know what he's talking about. You know, he's pushing a system that is a failure on paper and in practice, and yet here he is in the limelight for the presidency. It's an interesting time.
Yeah, I don't know why there wasn't a black Democrat trying for the.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that the thing leveled to the Republicans are always the Republicans are old white people.
Yeah.
Well, what are the Democrats putting out there? Nothing but old white people.
Right.
And the Republicans are as diverse as you can get. You know, Hispanics, blacks, women, they've got just about everything on the Republican ticket.
You know, at the prayer breakfast we attended the other day, I mean, there's no question that President Obama was the quintessential peak of the civil rights movement.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's basically King Obama.
Messiah.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, the fact that the Democrats didn't have a single black front runner blows my mind. I don't understand that. I mean, it seems
it's interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
You would think that they'd be following up one more time, right?
Yes. Yes. Why would you put that hag back up there and some dude from New England? Why would you do that? I mean, the last Democrat, New England Democrat, wasn't that Dukakis? I can't remember.
Yeah, Massachusetts.
Yes. We know that doesn't work. Why are you doing that again? So, I don't know.
Isn't there a sense that it's just Clinton's turn, that she's done her time and that she's endured and now it's her?
Yeah, and I think that was the case in 2008. I mean, it was her turn in 2008 and, you know, Hurricane Obama came in and just upset everything. You know, that was always her plan. And now she's, you know, Hillary confuses me because I don't understand why even liberals, I don't know why liberals even like her, because I've said it 100 times now in different settings, but I know why people like President Obama, because people aren't concerned about policies and stuff anymore. You know, no, we're in the age of the low knowledge information voter. They don't pay attention to those things. They don't know about taxes. They know the benefits that they get, and they know that that guy's a good-looking guy that gives a great speech.
Yes.
He is charismatic. I totally get it. When he got up at the inauguration with the Greek columns and everything, when he was in Denver at Mile High Stadium, and he's got, you know, he just looks like a Greek god up there, and it's quite pagan in what it looked like and everything. I totally understand why
and
people follow his
family is good looking.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And with Hillary, she's not a great speaker. She's not pleasant to look at. She's not pleasant to listen to. She doesn't have a resume. You know, the only thing she's known for, she was married to the biggest dirtball to ever be in the White House. You know,
who everyone loves.
And people love him.
Yeah.
the guy was the biggest reprobate in the history, you know, makes even ahead of Kennedy probably, you know, with his womanizing. And people love him and still don't like her. And yet she's still, that's the best the Democrats have to offer.
Yeah. It should be a slam dunk.
It should be. I mean, it should be a Reagan Mondale sort of election if the Republicans did what they needed.
49 out of 50?
Yeah, something like that.
Wow. And I think that was the final count with Reagan and Mondale.
Yeah, it got like 5 electoral votes or something. It was just, you know. And there are people out there saying, well, if they nominate Trump, he could take New York City or New York State. And I think they're crazy. You know, there are not enough. You know, Cruz got in trouble last week for saying New York values.
Yes.
But I don't know that there's enough people that are smart enough to know what's going on in New York to not that I would think Trump is the greatest thing, but if it's Trump and Hillary, I'll gladly hold my nose and vote. But I don't know that that Reagan Mondale ratio is realistic anymore. I don't know that'll ever happen in this country again. But it should be as lopsided as it can get with the candidates they're trotting out there.
Yeah, I think the criteria that's going to break the back is just basically, please make me happy to be an American again. You know, and that's going to be the voting criteria.
Yeah. Mm. Can we at least get Trump a better hat for that "Make America Great" thing again? It's like the old trucker hat with the string across the front. I mean, the guy's a billionaire. At least we can get him a decent hat.
All right, those are our thoughts. What are yours? Who are you voting for out there? We'll do another something after it's Iowa, and then it's New Hampshire, and then I believe it's South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And then it's like a multi-state one.
I know we moved up a little bit, so we should actually be in the conversation a little bit this year. We had a later primary before.
We were a swing vote at the mid-election.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that was the big deal.
Yeah.
Right. And so what do you predict on Iowa, David?
I think last time I looked, I was trying to – I think Cruz is ahead in Iowa. I don't know that Iowa means all that much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember – what was it? Was it 2004 or so? 2000 or 2004 when Howard Dean won Iowa and was ahead, and then did his famous speech and his little noise that he made up on stage.
He was done.
And that was it. You know, they just ruined him with that
but
video.
I think Huckabee won Iowa.
Yeah, Huckabee won, I think, 2004, 2008, 2008 probably.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it didn't matter. I mean, you go over to New England and you got to get South Carolina, and there's such
I keep waiting for Trump's ratings to fall, and they just haven't. So I don't know what to think about it. I thought he'd be long gone by now, and he has stuck, so we'll see what goes on.
All right, those are our thoughts. Check out Marco Rubio. Get some more information about him. He may be, I don't think he's going away, put it that way. If he's not a leader now, 4 years from now or 8 years from now, I mean, he's a young man. Did you? I mean, he's a young man. He's gaining a ton of good experience with all this debating and all that. That's going to do him well. And as long as he continues to give answers like that, the evangelicals in Florida will keep reelecting him. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.